The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Well, as you heard on the news headlines, we mentioned it earlier, the death toll from the disease in the Republic is now 46. Confirmed cases now hitting 2,615. And the question of closing our borders was raised earlier this morning. And once again, we're going to raise it with a professor of microbial disease at UCD and consultant in infectious disease at St. Vincent's Hospital, Dr. Paddy Mallon. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
That question of literally closing our borders, not obviously to cargo, vital cargo and the supply chains, but to people, as one listener put it, randomers coming in from the United States and Europe.
I think it's a valid point to be raising, but I think it probably needs to be teased out a bit more. And it's a bit similar to this concept of lockdown, that you can talk about closing a border, you can talk about a lockdown, but you've actually got to try and detail what that involves and what your aim is. And the main aim of any measure would be to try and prevent, where possible, new cases of COVID-19 coming into the state at a time where we're trying to suppress the number of new infections within the state. The best time for that to happen and how it's done, I think, still needs to be thought through. We have an ongoing epidemic within the country at the moment, and the priority really needs to be to control that and ensure that the resources that we have are directed at the problem that we have. And then I think as that comes under control, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, there should be a greater focus and a reallocation of resource towards trying to prevent new cases coming into the country, so that the gains that we've made we can maintain. But I do think it is important that we ensure that, for example, citizens that are overseas, some of them will be in countries where they may not have access to healthcare, where they could be in countries where there's uncontrolled epidemics. We've got to make sure that we're able to facilitate their safe return to the country. And we've also got to ensure that we facilitate the free flow of goods, as you mentioned.
Yeah. That question, though, of what we do with people when they return. I mean, many people have been advised, for example, to return home from the United States, because without their employer's health cover, if they lose their job, they would be really exposed to the inadequacies of the American public health service. So, you know, I compared it earlier. If we were told that there were people coming from Wuhan 2 months ago, a plane load of them, we would want to isolate them, absolutely. If we were told a month ago there was a plane load of people coming from the Lombardy region, and indeed there might have been with the rugby cancelled and all of that, but knowing what we know now, we would say they've got to be isolated. We've got to set up a place for these people to be compulsorily isolated. We cannot depend on them doing it themselves, because for the moment they feel grand. Thank you very much. 2 days later, they show the signs of COVID. Why are we not approaching the United States and New York particularly in the way that we would have approached Wuhan or Lombardy?
So there's two train of thoughts here. We've set up an environment within the community here, which is already got significant restrictions. And for anyone entering the environment from overseas, or anyone entering our community for overseas, they would also fall under those restrictions. So if you think about it, what the government have recommended and they're now enforcing is that people shouldn't be going more than 2 kilometres beyond their house. They shouldn't be gathering at home with anyone other than their own family, and that's their own immediate family. And if they're symptomatic in any way, that they should be staying at home and seeking testing. And that applies to everyone, whether they live in the country currently or whether they're arriving in from the airport. So that to turn around and say, pick a group of people coming in from the airport and saying that we're going to enforce that isolation on you, while the rest of society doesn't have the same level of enforcement, to me, you could argue, doesn't make sense. It would be different if we didn't have these very strict regulations or recommendations coming from the government for everyone in the country, then you would say, okay, that we have a risk being introduced. But the fact that we already have these very strict recommendations for everyone means that they should also apply to everyone coming into the country. And if they're enforced appropriately, then that should be sufficient for now, I think.
I'm just thinking, though, the passenger getting off coming from New York, where we know there is a hot spot, it's been described as the epicenter now of COVID-19, and they get a cab, they get a taxi. You know,
yeah, so
I mean, one has to think of all the possibilities. Not everyone coming from New York will have it, but there's, you know, a higher likelihood than otherwise.
So under those circumstances, you could argue that, for example, there should be enhanced screening at airports for people that are symptomatic. And that's something that I think should probably be considered. In terms of whether that person comes out and gets a cab to a hotel, I guess first of all you've got to ask yourself, what is a person coming from New York doing? Where New York already have restrictions, why are they leaving New York if they're under restrictions to come to a country that also has another set of restrictions? To me, it doesn't really.
No, but don't forget, our government has advised people to come home. Irish people who are on visas and now have lost their jobs, there's a particular government advisory that they should return home.
So if it's an Irish person coming back into the country and they need transport to get home, then they need transport in much the same way as anyone else would need transport to get home. So that becomes a practical issue. And they would then be operating under the guidance that we're all operating under. That one journey that you talk about in terms of that taxi driver coming home, if that person is symptomatic, quite clearly they shouldn't be going out of the house. And that would include having the common sense, if they arrive at the airport symptomatic, not to be getting in, using public transport to get home, but find another means of getting home. So I don't think that the answer is to set up a lot of quarantine camps for people that are coming in through our airport. I don't know at the moment that we're really at that stage where the amount of resource that would be needed to set that up would be best directed in setting that up, when it would be much better directed in terms of looking at the outbreaks that we're seeing within the country and within our country's nursing homes. I think at the minute, that needs to be the focus of where our resources are. And with the background that the concept is that everyone entering our community, whether they be Irish or non-Irish, has to follow the same set of very strict guidelines that the government's put in place to try and contain the infection.
Now, I have a question for the doctor. I'm on high blood pressure tablets. Should I still be working with other people? Is that any kind of a contraindication as long as you observe social distancing and so on?
I think if you're observing adequate physical distancing and you're following the guidelines that the government have put out, which I think the guidelines that the government put out are clear and stringent, that there should be very little opportunity for people to be coming into contact with another person outside their family unless it's absolutely essential. So if you are a vulnerable person, and it's not about being on high blood pressure medications, but if you're an older person and you consider your health to be vulnerable, you should not be leaving the house. That's clear government guidance. If you're on blood pressure medication but you don't consider yourself to be vulnerable, you should only be coming into contact with other people if it's absolutely essential.
A couple of related ones. Can you ask the doctor, is there a specific test for COVID-19? For example, if a person dies and is suffering from an underlying condition and they contract COVID-19 and then pass away, which would be recorded as the cause of death? That's one. And a related one, last year, 11 people a day on average died from lung disease in Ireland. Would the 10 deaths with COVID yesterday be 10 more than we would usually see from lung disease, or would they be part really of the same thing? That's from Declan in Mayo.
So to take the first question, the guidance on this is quite clear, that if a death is suspected to have been contributed to by COVID, regardless of the cause, then that death should be notified to the coroner and testing will be conducted. And if someone, for example, unfortunately arrives into the hospital and passes away in hospital before the test result comes back, we notify the coroner that there is an outstanding test, so that the coroner can then tee up the test with the deceased. And in that way, we are aiming to get as accurate a picture as possible of the impact of COVID-19 infection on mortality. So it's not just people in hospital that are tested positive that die that are notified. There's a much broader picture. The second question, just remind me again from
was
your
about,
listener mail.
11 people a day die anyway from lung disease in Ireland. So to what extent might there be an overlap there?
I don't see any real overlap at the moment from my own clinical experience. The deaths that I've experienced, unfortunately, within hospital, I know most of my colleagues would feel the same, have been predominantly directly driven by COVID infection. Even though a lot of the people that have died have had underlying conditions, unfortunately, I believe that they'd still be alive if they hadn't contracted COVID-19.
Now, some probably fairly straightforward questions for Professor Mallon. Can I just sit inside my 75-year-old mum's house on the stairs while she remains 30 feet away in the kitchen to have a quick 5-minute chat in person, but in the warmth, rather than have her standing at the front door getting cold?
What I would suggest is that you buy your mother a mobile phone with a good video app and a video conference your mother. The reason for that is physical distancing, especially for the elderly and more vulnerable in our society, is not so much about staying away from them so that you don't cough on them. It's about this concept of cocooning. What you want to do is to create a safe environment for our elderly citizens and for more vulnerable citizens to live in. And it's about not introducing any risk of infection. Now, the two main ways that this infection can be transmitted is through this droplet spread, which is where someone coughs or sneezes near someone. But it can also be spread through contact. And that's why the physical distancing thing is important. And I think that if you're coming into someone's environment or coming into someone's cocoon, there's always a very small risk that you could introduce a contamination into that person's environment. So where possible, I would avoid doing that and have complete physical distancing so that you could avoid spreading this infection to its maximum degree.
Can I contract COVID-19 from stroking a visiting cat or a neighbor's dog?
It's a theoretical possibility, and if you want to avoid at all costs contracting this infection, avoid all physical contact outside the environment that you control 100%. So if someone
the theory would be that somebody isn't it the theory that someone remote though it might be that someone coughs on the back of the cat or the dog, and then sometime later you stroke them and then you touch your face.
Someone sneezes into their hand, pets their cat, the cat then walks across to you, you pet the cat. It's not that the cat is infected, but it's a contaminated surface. And I think that people just need to be, for the next couple of weeks, they just need to be doing as little as possible to put themselves at risk of touching contaminated surfaces or being in contact with other people if it's not necessary.
Ed says, from April, May onwards, flu cases seem to drop dramatically and are very low across the summer. Similar for other viruses, I expect. Why should we not expect such a fall in COVID-19 for these months? Rather than being in lockdown for the summer months, would it then be better to let it slowly spread for that short time?
I really wish that was the case, but unfortunately the weather patterns in, for example, southern Italy and southern Spain would probably be better than our summers, and we're not really seeing that having any protective effect.
Yeah.
So I think that that we can still hope that this will settle down with the summer coming on, but I don't think that's going to be the case. It's going to be the measures that we're taking now that are going to define our outcome in the next couple of weeks.
Question for Dr. Paddy. My husband, 3 kids and I have not had the virus, as far as we're aware, and have not been in contact with anyone outside our family unit for over 2 weeks now, except for me doing a shop every 7 or 8 days. We will continue with this for as long as is needed. However, I'm starting to wonder how this will end any time in the next few months. If my family don't get the virus and start socialising again any time in the future, we will continue to be at risk of getting the virus and therefore pose a risk to our elderly parents who are currently cocooning. Am I right to think that the only way we'll be able to get back to normal and lower the risk to our parents is to get the virus, which I don't plan on, or to wait until a vaccine is available, and that could take 12 months plus? That's Edel, a nurse on maternity leave, feeling hugely for my colleagues.
So unfortunately, I guess we the answer to that question is we just don't know. We have to take this one step at a time. At the moment, we are in the, I'd say we're in well into that process of this epidemic flowing through our country. And we've got to see if the preparations that we've made, and we've made a lot of preparations very early, much earlier than most other countries. We've got to see if the preparations that we've made at a societal level will actually result in a much slower wave of infections than, for example, what they're seeing in the UK and what they're seeing in the US. And my hope is that that will be the case. Once we get through that stage, then you enter this sort of post-epidemic stage that some of the Asian countries are going through at the moment. And we need to watch what's happening in Asia and learn from them, because we can learn from them about what the best way is out of this. And it's probably going to be a staged release of restrictions under very close monitoring so that we don't see a resurgence of infections. And countries in Asia are doing that, and some things are working well. Some things aren't working well. We just need to be looking and learning from their mistakes so that we can plan for the post-epidemic phase in much the same way, I think, that we planned for this phase that we're undergoing at the moment. So a lot of things that we don't know, but what we need to do is just to continue the planning that we're doing. And I think that we're doing the right thing, but we've just got to sit back now and wait and see if all of the measures that we've put in place over the last several weeks will actually have an impact.
Hi, Pat. I just rang my GP to make an appointment, non-COVID-19 related, and they're not taking any appointments. I have arthritis. What am I going to do? That's from Dave.
Yeah, it's very difficult for a lot of people out there who suffer from chronic conditions. And I think that the health service overall is going to be under strain for the next couple of weeks. There are two issues. The first is that you've got to decide from your own health condition whether the risk of you needing to go to the doctor is great enough for you to be putting yourself at risk of ending up with this infection. And that's, a decision that everyone needs to make. The second thing is that if you do feel sufficiently unwell, that you need medical help, then the hospitals are still open and the hospitals are still treating people with emergencies that are non-COVID related. And we've put a lot of work in place to ensure that hospitals have a COVID pathway and a non-COVID pathway specifically for that. So we don't really want people sitting at home getting sicker and sicker and sicker. But it is about your own risk assessment. If it's something that you think can hold off, for example, seeing your GP for another week or two, then that might be the best approach. But if you're sick and you need help, there is help available for you and you should access it.
I presume also if it's a question of renewal of a prescription that can be done. The GP can telephone your pharmacist and clear the renewal of a prescription by doing a consultation down the phone.
That's true. And I would just advise everyone to look at their medication stock and try not to leave these things to the last minute. So if you know that, for example, you're going to run out of medicines within the next 2 weeks, it's probably a good idea to start putting those phone calls through now, just in case there is a delay with your GP getting back to you or there's a delay with the pharmacist doing it. So just plan a bit ahead in advance, because this is probably going to be something that's going to be dragging on for a number of weeks yet in terms of the health system being under stress.
A couple of general ones. My parents are over 80 and have been isolated since the 12th of March. They show no symptoms of COVID-19. Would it be safe for them to go for a drive, not to get out of the car, but just to get a different perspective on the world? That's from David in Dublin. Another one. My son is a postman living with me. I'm 71. How can I cocoon? That's from Moira. Another one. I'm 34, living with my parents who are over 70. Should I be going out to collect their meds or go for a walk, or should I just stay indoors with them? That's from Emer.
So the first one about the drive, I think, again, for the next 2 weeks while we're entering this epidemic, while we're in the middle of this epidemic growth of infections across the country, the fact that your parents have put in so much hard work keeping themselves safe up to this point, I would really try and focus on making that pay off. And the way to make that pay off over the next couple of weeks when we're seeing a big increase in infections is for them just to stay put and stay in at home as much as possible. If they do feel that they need to go out, they should really follow the government guidelines, which is don't be going more than 2 kilometres beyond your house, which in a car means a drive of probably about 2 minutes. So I don't really know that that's going to be the answer. I know that it's frustrating for everyone, but these 2 weeks are key, and the investment that everyone has put in up to this point will be borne out in what happens over the next 2 weeks. In terms of your listener, who's the 71-year-old married to a post person or a postman, that's something that you really need to discuss within your own family unit and decide whether or not the advice to, for example, continue working should be balanced against the advice that the government are giving around cocooning. If you feel that you're very vulnerable and you feel that you can't control your own environment, then that's the sort of discussion that your partner needs to have with their employer about whether they continue in work. Because the key to this, as I've said on a number of occasions, is we have to protect our older population to avoid them getting this infection at all costs. And the same thing goes for the listener who lives with their elderly parents. You are part of that unit. If you bring infection into that unit, the consequences are very severe. So in a way, you have to look at yourself as part of their cocoon and have the same responsibility and take the same approach at protecting them as if you were their age, would be the way I put it. We really have to avoid this infection getting into our older population at all costs.
Dr. Paddy Mellon, Professor of Microbial Disease at UCD and Consultant in Infectious Disease at St. Vincent's Hospital, thank you very much for joining us.